Accession number 8171, Reel 7.
Mr. Metalman, Reel 7. What happened next after the removal of these civilian leaders from Rostov?
Well, of course, I don't know what did happen to them, but shortly afterwards we were withdrawn from the city because panzer divisions never are being kept for long in cities. We always preferred to get out into the open country. And, of course, the campaign went on because the move to Rostov, as I realized later and as everyone, I suppose, knew, the general drive was to go to the Volga, to reach the Volga at Stalingrad, because to reach the Volga was an important target. It was a major transport center for railways, and we understood the Russians had ship transport, heavy ship transport was going up and down the Volga all the time. It was linking industrial centers. And as I explained earlier on, we quite often, even in battle when there was time, had some lecturing on the whole situation. Of course, it was a very colored Nazi lecturing, obviously. But I do remember that we were being told that there are three main targets in Russia to capture. The one is Leningrad, the other is Moscow, and the third is Stalingrad. And that we were the ones who were to go for Stalingrad. So from Rostov, to go to Stalingrad, you've got to go north into what we call the Great Donbogen, the great bend of the River Don. The country there is poor soil, steppe country. I remember the dust was quite a problem in every way. It got into your eyes, it got into the engines, it got into your food. Dust, dust, dust. That's how I remember the Great Donbogen, as we called it. But the advance was relentless, except that whenever we came to a river, and there are a few rivers to cross, we crossed the Donets, and later on, of course, the Don itself. It's a very wide river. The bridges were blown up, and one had to queue. And sometimes, in case of the Don, I remember at college, I think we stayed there for 2 days before we had a chance to set over. That was the general way. I then remember, it must have been at that time, that I got wounded, slightly wounded. A shrapnel went through my boot and into my foot at the ankle. And what happened then, that lice got into it, and that because of that, not so much because of the shrapnel wound, because the lice had infected it, because we all had lice. We didn't say we had lice, the lice had us. We were in a very poor situation there with the lice, and once they get into wounds, it can be very dangerous. And I had an infection and hardly could walk, and they took me to hospital. I think it was Stalino. I didn't stay there all that long, about 10 days, something like that. I'm not sure. But when I left the hospital, I was not fit enough to join my unit, which was now on the run towards Stalingrad. So what the German army then did, those who came out of hospital, they were being used for some sort of guard duty. And this was an experience which shook me, really. I think for the first time that I was really shaken by something. I think it happened that time, but sometimes chronologically and geographically one can get a bit confused. But I think it was that time when I came back from Stalino Hospital. I was commandeered with others to guard a prison camp. It was quite a large prison camp in the Great Donbogen. I don't know for sure, but I think the town of Milerovo wasn't all that way, all that far away from it. The prisoners, there must have been thousands. They were all out in the open field, and the weather was good. They had very little to eat. They were of the peasant type. What struck me was that within that prison camp, there was a little farm at the side, really. There was all barbed wire around it. And all the communists were being taken in there. People like Politruks, we called them Politruks, I think they called themselves Politruks, political commissars of the Red Army, or civilian communists. And very often, these communists, they were being given away by their mates. The people in the large prison camps, they were of the peasant type. I don't want to say anything against peasant types, but if you see many Russian peasants, you can see whether they come from the countryside or whether they come from the town. And what struck me was that these communists who came into these compound, and I was a guard there, that they were definitely the more intelligent-looking ones. And there were also people, men and women. There were some women in there. I liked the look of them. They were sympathetic-looking to me. I liked them. And somehow, my belief was that communists were criminals. Communism was a criminal conspiracy, and that communists must look like criminals. But I could see it. To me, they didn't look like criminals. On the contrary, they were, seemed to be more intelligent, and also from the human point, very sympathetic. Now, all of them got shot, because at that time already, I think it had come out, and later on it was better explained, I think, at the Nuremberg Tribunal, Hitler's famous, infamous Kommissarbefehl. Everyone connected with the Communist Party, political commissars, they all were to be shot. No appeal, no nothing, to be shot. And what happened there, they were shot in this camp. There were some SD units, I think, but I couldn't be sure whether it was SD or just SS. I'm not sure. But they were the political arm of the army. They questioned them, and these political commissars also, they stayed there for sometimes a few days, and they all got shot. excuse me. Yes, and all of them got shot. And being a guard, guard duty is rather boring. I now had my trouble with my foot. I couldn't walk properly yet. And I walked around with my rifle over my shoulder within the camp. And by that time, I had learned a kind of pidgin Russian. I never was able to read nor write it, but in an ordinary manner with ordinary people, I could speak quite a bit of Russian, and I think I had asked my mother to send me a little booklet on the Russian language, which she had done, and I was learning from that booklet. I knew quite a few of these prisoners now, and there was one. His name was Boris. And I knew his second name. He spoke quite a bit of German, and he was a locksmith like myself. And he came from the town of Gorlovka, which I knew. It's somewhere in the Donbass. He told me all about his family. I told him about my family. He had asked me, and as we found out, we both had been locksmiths, and then he had been to a college somewhere, and then he had joined the army, and he was a communist, he was a political commissar. He was, I think, 2 years older than I. He was a nice-looking man, a tall, blonde man, and I knew by his eyes that Boris was a good man. I couldn't understand that somebody like him should be a communist. It was against all my upbringing, against all my belief. But Boris and I, we talked quite a bit, because it was boring. He was in a pigsty. There was a little wall around there, and he was sitting there on straw, and I remember I knew that he was going to be shot the next morning. And whether he knew, I don't know. I didn't tell him. because I was a bit disturbed about that, that Boris should be shot. And I had guard duty, was something from 2 to 4, I think. It was a lovely summer night. And I was leaning outside on that wall, and Boris was sitting in the pigsty on the straw. And I remember I was saying something to him, "Yes, Boris, and your world revolution and all that is all a lot of cock, and that all will be, is all finished, isn't it?" Because at that time it looked as whether we would take Stalingrad, and I firmly believed we would in this summer beat the Russians. And he said something to me that, "Oh," he said, "you told me all about your life. You are a worker, son. You are a worker. You are so stupid," he said. "You believe everything which is against your interest." He said, "You haven't understood what it means, world revolution." And I thought, "Ah, oh, well, he knows he's getting shot. He wants to get one at me." Also, we had become rather friendly. But he was angry with me. And he said, "World revolution, really, is nothing more than that ordinary people wake up and overthrow that system that oppresses them, the system of money, the system of capitalism. And we have started it with our revolution, and we had all sorts of problems and troubles. But if you think the world revolution is finished, it got nothing to do with us. We were the first ones who had started it. But it will go on all over the world. And even if you win this war, you won't be able to do much about that." And I thought, "Ah, oh, well, he talks a load of rot." And I left him then shortly afterwards. But the best I can say about myself, we were quartered in stables on straw, not far away. I couldn't sleep. I think it was 4 when I went in there. And I knew about 6 or so, they were always being shot, 2, 3, 4, 5 every morning. And I heard the shots, and I was so uneasy about it, I went out. I knew where they were being buried. And there were other prisoners who buried, I think 2 or 3 were shot. And one of them was Boris. And I still saw him. They just had thrown him into a little trench. And he was half covered. Still warm. He only had been shot about 3, 4 minutes earlier. And the Russian prisoners who were shoveling him in, I was the only German there then. They looked at me with fear and hatred. And I was sad, and I knew there was something wrong and couldn't put my finger on it. But then I walked away again and thought, "Ah, well, we have to sort this world out, and our way, our German way, surely is the right way. And, well, if you do some planing, you have some dust, some wood dust." In that way, I tried to do away with it and forgot about it, I suppose, because if one doesn't forget about something like that, one goes crazy. I still believed firmly in the righteousness of our cause. But it gave my belief a dent. Somehow I felt the shooting of Boris was wrong, and I couldn't explain it.
What happened next?
Well, I think I only stayed there for, again, 7 or 10 days. It's long ago. I can't quite remember the exact time. But then I joined the unit again, and then the unit was still in the Don Bogen and moving towards Stalingrad. The fighting wasn't very heavy. What now was the main problem was the general transport confusion, I noticed, because our units had taken Kalach, where there was a bridge across, and everyone, every unit, and there were hundreds, and were moving towards Kalach, and there were queues and slow moving, hardly any fighting. We played chess with our crew, and as it so happened, I was never a good chess player, but I was better than my mates, and I won. We put our ammunition boxes down and put the chessboard on there, and there we were sitting in the sun and sometimes moving a few kilometers and going closer to the Don, to the bridges. And I remember once there were two Russian boys, one about 12, 13, and the other slightly younger, in ragged clothes, village boys, and they were watching us. And by the way, they were watching us playing chess. I could see they knew the game. And after I had won again, my mates weren't much good in it, I said, "You want a game?" And the eldest said, "Yes." So he settled down, and I remember in my arrogant way, I said to my mates, "Germany versus Russia, now you'll see who wins the chess game, who will win the war." And we started off. He was sitting opposite me, nice-looking lad, but he was in ragged clothes, very poorly dressed. And before I knew, he had me by the scruff of my neck. He was beating me. I couldn't get out of it. And I thought, I must have made a mistake here somewhere. A boy like this, on top of it, a Russian, second-class people as they are, and crumbs, you can't get beaten by them. But he beat me, and I said, "Now, come on, have another game. Now I'm concentrating." I tried to explain it all away. I hadn't concentrated on the game. And again, I said to him, "Now you see the real thing here, Germany, Russia," and really started to play seriously as best as I could. And again, he had me after half an hour, whatever it took, and beat me. And then we moved on later on. I was angry. I respected him. I told him he was a good chess player then. But somehow, it gave me a little push, a little dent in my beliefs, second-class people and all this, and a young one of these second-class people, he beats me, what I thought in a brainy game, and most probably in those days I thought I was brainy. These were all these little things that happened. As I said, there was not much of the fighting. Once we approached the village in a leisurely way by going towards the Don, I think it was then, and I saw that Russians, they have a kind of a hole behind their house, dug in the earth, which is a kind of cellar where they keep their food to keep it cool. And I saw in that village, when we approached it from a high vantage point, that some Russian soldiers were running across, helped by women, and climbed quickly into these holes at the back of the houses. And I thought, I kept a good eye on it, and to keep it in mind where exactly it was. We entered the village. I went into the house where I had seen the two women go in, and they stood there and were frightened. And I said to them, "I've seen what you were doing." And they say, "What?" I said, "Look, you've got some soldiers in there, haven't you?" And they said, "No, no, no." I said, "You have." I said, "Come on." We were going out. And then they started pleading with me, and the one said it was a brother of her or whatnot. I forgot exactly, but in what relation they were to each other. Anyway, I went to that hole, and I pulled the cover away, and I saw the two blokes sitting in there, frightened. And they were saying something to me. I couldn't quite understand what it was. My Russian was not all that good, and they were tied up in their fear, I think. And one of them threw a hand grenade out of that hole. And I thought he was throwing a hand grenade at me. And I rushed off and put my head down. And he was coming, climbing out then. And he only wanted to show me that he had surrendered. And I felt a little bit like a fool. A great German, courageous soldier running away from somebody throwing a hand grenade at you. Anyway, we took some prisoners, I sent them to the back, and I don't know really what happened. Nothing to be proud of. Well, then, we crossed the River Don at Kalaj, and went towards Stalingrad. And never was really in Stalingrad as such. But, of course, once we had crossed the river, and from the River Don to the River Volga is something, I think, like 40 miles. Those 40 miles were the most difficult to get over, because now the Russians were pressed against the River Volga and couldn't get away anymore. The resistance grew, but also the German concentration, of course, grew. The concentration which had been on a wide front now grew onto a smaller area on the approaches of Stalingrad. It was the steppe between the Don and the Volga steppe. I don't know how they call that steppe, I knew. Very dusty, very hot weather. And there's not much memory left, but at the outside of Stalingrad, we could not see the river, but we could see the air over the river. When you look at a large river, you can see that the river is there somewhere down below. So we were very close to it, to Stalingrad, and there was a factory, a large factory, and there was such a chaos going on. It was the early hours of the morning, and with some other friends of mine, we jumped into this factory in order to get out of the way more than anything. And it was still dark, must have been about 3 o'clock in the morning. There were big machines in there, turning benches or how lathes and things like that. I don't know the exact kind of machines, large machines. But what we didn't know was that the Red Army was still on the first floor. And, we soon found out. We were sitting down there, and they were throwing hand grenades down and were shooting down the staircase, and we were shooting up the staircase. We were trapped because we tried to get out now, and I think we lost one because now it had become lighter, light of the morning, and coming out in the courtyard, they controlled the courtyard from the windows, which before that they hadn't done. So we were stuck in there. I think we were about a dozen. And it was rather horrible because during the day it was very hot. We couldn't afford to sleep. They kept throwing hand grenades down and kept shooting down. We had no food. We had no water. And it was only the following night that we managed to get out by shouting across to the German lines that we were in here and they should give us firing cover to fire at the windows, all done by shouting. And somehow we got out. That really is what I remember of Stalingrad, because we were never taken into the city, whether we were Panzer Division or other Panzer Divisions, I think, were in the city, because the city was badly smashed, badly bombed. We were being pulled out, our Panzer Division, and we were pulled out all the way back over the River Don. For tactical reasons, but as I said before, we never were told why. But I think they thought, the army command, Paolo, thought he could do without the 22nd Division in Stalingrad. Now we went back and were back in the Donbogen, which was all the Stalingrad front, and we joined the Romanian army. There was a Romanian army, I forgot, was it the first or the third or something like that. In order to give our allied armies, there was a Romanian, Hungarian and Italian armies were involved in the Battle of Stalingrad. And our division joined the Romanian army to give them some back strength, I think. They were rather unreliable to our way of thinking.
About what date would this have been? What would be the season?
The season was must have been late summer. It must have been somewhere in August. Yes, somewhere in August. It must have been August, September, somewhere around. Our job was to keep the northern flank, because Stalingrad was a kind of push-in. It was a forward move, and there were extended flanks to the south and to the north. And our job with the Romanian army, I suppose, was to protect the northern flank of Stalingrad, of the Stalingrad army, because now the battle really was hotting up in Stalingrad itself. We heard about it, and of course we got some reports, and every day the Wehrmacht report came out. So we knew what was going on and that the fighting was hard. There was a general lull in our position because we were driving now up and down the Don, somehow got sometimes into skirmishes with Russians, but obviously the Don was between us and the Russian army. What was going on north of that Don Bogen, we didn't know. But so we had while the battle was raging, we had a fair time.
So what happened next?
Well, now the weather got colder. September, I think we went into when we were doing these trips there to show ourselves to the Russians along the Don. And we moved in October. I remember there that once in a peasant house we had a radio, the Funktrupp, as we called them, they had radio connections. And Hitler made a speech. I'm sure it was in October. We were all sitting in that room and listening to that speech, and he was saying something that the Russian bear now was more or less finished, and all what was going on now was kind of mopping up operations which were to come, and promised again a great future for our military and for the nation as a whole. And I remember all of us, we were sitting there rather subdued because we knew it wasn't true. The Russian bear wasn't beaten. We knew it, and we had a suspicion that something would happen there around Stalingrad which would prove that the Russian bear wasn't beaten, because all the time for the last few weeks the Russians had evaded battle. We never had tied them down, except now in Stalingrad, in which we personally not anymore now were involved. But it was getting colder, and first snow we had then, I think, in December. Still not many battles, skirmishes sometimes we were fighting. And we were in the region north of a place called Perelazovsky. I remember that because this is important. This is where later on the Russians broke through. We were now in position with the Romanian army to guard the Don. The whole of the river was not the front line. The Russians had managed to keep bridgeheads, the western side of the Don, out of which they later broke out. We realized something was going on because at night we could hear plenty of panzer movement. We heard the roars of panzers and vehicles moving, and we knew something was afoot there. But we were being told that the Russians are being beaten, and surely they have some panzers over there. But that it happened every night. Some of us were very suspicious, with good reason, because I only remember that by reading, of course, later on about it. It was on the 19th of November that the Russians broke through from the north and from the south in order to meet after a few days those two armies which had broken through behind Stalingrad. And by that they had completed the pincer move, which had locked in the 6th Army in Stalingrad. By that, Paulus army was stuck. And we were at that very point where they broke through in the northern section. I suppose they thought the Romanian army is there, and where the Romanian army was, there was the weakest point, perhaps. They broke through there. And luckily or unluckily, I was there. Most of my mates got killed, but then that will be another story.